man wrong side of the pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. Hello. I am Jeremy Lance. Hey, what's up?
Not much. What's going on with you?
Not much. Not a whole lot.
No?
Kind of a basic weekend.
Basic weekend for a basic dude.
That's me.
Yeah.
Pretty basic.
I enjoyed an away match weekend.
What does that mean for you?
I mean, I still work. I still have to do the socials on the weekend when we're away.
Yeah.
But I don't have to be at the stadium like 4 hours beforehand and just generally didn't have to wear a suit. Generally far less questions on social media.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a little bit easier. And I get to go out and take in them the action sometimes at a bar. So
you don't have to field a bunch of questions about where to park.
Where to park. Where can I get my tickets? I'm mad that these people are standing up in my section. Those are pretty normal game day complaints when we have a home match. We don't have as many of those on the weekends.
Hey, I didn't bring my ID. I can still buy beer at the stadium, right?
Sure. if it's actually you, I think you'll pass as someone who's over the age of 21. If it's some other people, I would probably advise, you know, maybe having someone else purchase your beer for you.
Great American Ballpark used to have a weird, I don't know, maybe they still have it, rule about IDs. Where, you know, for a while there, Ohio was doing the vertical ID
if you
were under 21.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this standard policy of, like, no vertical. If you have a vertical ID, like, we're not going to accept it.
Right.
Because obviously it
means that you're not old enough.
Right. Yep. They forgot this whole thing that not everybody in the world has an Ohio driver's license.
Yeah, right.
And so I had just moved back from Alabama.
Where they had?
Where all the license are vertical.
Oh, man.
And they refused to sell me a beer. I was like 22. And they were like, yeah, no, sorry. We cannot accept a vertical license. I was like, this is a stupid policy. You understand this, right? You understand this is a dumb policy that just makes you look stupid?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the person who you were yelling at about this came up with that policy.
They did.
Yeah, that is pretty frustrating, though, especially for like someone who's just over the age of 21.
Uh-huh.
You really pride the fact that you're now allowed to drink in public and not get in trouble for it. So there's probably nothing that would have incised you more than not getting that beer at the age of 22, is my guess.
It would have been my first beer at Great American Ballpark. I'm trying to think if I've even had one ever at Great American Ballpark, because just shortly after that, I became part of like the working press. And
you're not allowed to drink while you're
They stopped rolling out the free keg of beer back in like the 90s, so.
Before you were at it.
Yeah, I got out by then.
I think we've talked about this before. It's pretty unusual to see drinking in the American press. It does happen pretty frequently in non-American settings.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite story that you've ever talked about was when you and Rob Stone were sat in the overflow seating for a U.S.-Mexico match. Legitimately, you and Rob Stone.
Yeah, me and old Stoner.
Yeah.
Sitting there.
Good dude, by the way.
Super awesome guy.
But you watch some of the Mexican press that were there to cover the match roll back into the box.
Yeah.
With beers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah, yeah. They were helping themselves.
I'm good for them.
And at one point I thought, if Stoner gets a beer, I'm going for it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he did not go for the beer.
No.
And you were
not sure why. I don't even think he had to do anything the rest of the night. Like, he did a bunch of
Fox wasn't covering the games.
No, the game was on ESPN at the time. He did a bunch of
pre-game stuff.
Yeah, because it was back when Fox or FS1 actually had live programming that wasn't people yelling at each other or sports.
Right.
Like, they had like basically like Sports Center style shows.
Yeah, right.
Where like, hey, leading up to these games, like we'll do some live look-ins. And so he was doing a bunch of those.
Yeah.
And so once the game happened, I think he was
done doing that. Yeah. He made it around during the tailgate for that particular one when I was co-hosting along with our good friend from the Free Beer Movement, Dan. He and I co-hosted along with Sam's Army,
And the Columbus Police Department. They also co-hosted.
Ultimately, they did co-host that.
And they were the ones to go like, hey guys, I think we're done.
It was interesting. I was talking about that with a couple of people from AO the other day, and they were like, oh my God, you were that other guy. And I was like, yeah, I was definitely fading in the background, so I did not become
arrested
of Columbus's contingent, the police departments anyway. But yeah, Rob Stone made it around to our tailgate and made a comment. I'd split my foot open on a rock in the lake a couple days beforehand and had to wear open top shoes, so I didn't have it, you know, cooped up. And Rob Stone was commenting
on your massive wound.
On my massive wound, like, hey, have you had that looked at? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. It looks terrible, but it's fine.
Just letting it air out, Stoner.
Yeah. So now that we are, what, almost 7 minutes into the podcast, and we've talked about Rob Stone, the Mexican press, and my wound on my foot, perhaps we should move into
the wound in our fantasy?
The wound in our fantasy life. Luckily, this week, you were the only one who carried the burden of wounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did okay. I had a decent week. It's not over yet, of course.
Right. Lacazette could drop some bombs, and I go shooting straight up.
That would help you out a good deal, because as of right now, you've fallen 17 places to 133rd in the table out of 141 entrants. You're shooting for your spot at the bottom of the table like you're doing in the MLS side, it looks like.
Keep it consistent.
I improved 11 places to 120th, which sounds good that I moved 11 places, but I'm really not that far ahead of you. And then Mad King's Reign by Jackson Fambrow, that's six shows running now with him at the top of the Premier League table on the fantasy side of things. And MLS, there are matches in progress tonight, so these updates do not include those matches. Designated Failures by Derek Friedman. You're going to stay on top for your seventh show in a row. That's right. Impossible for you to get enthroned or dethroned.
Right, unless the person behind you had Diego Valeri.
Yeah, well,
had a brace,
and then also had a triple your captain type deal
or something.
Because he has a 90-point lead at this point, I think.
Mind the gap.
Yeah, I fell one place to 49th. You stayed in 57th, which we will again remind everyone is dead last.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's fantasy for you.
Okay. That sucks. Let's go to actual soccer being played by actual people. No one's in 57th place yet. We'll start with teams doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester City and Chelsea both rolling to big victories in quantity of goals-wise. They both played slappies as far as opponents.
Yes.
We'll start with City. City get the 5-0 victory over Crystal Palace.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal Palace haven't scored a goal.
Yeah, I was going to say,
still haven't done
one. This is the result we all expected in this match.
Yeah.
To be fair, it did take City 45 minutes to break down the guard of Palace.
And then that guard was very much broken.
And then it literally split wide open. City got goals. I think it was two from Raheem Sterling, one from Aguero. And then Sané, who had that opener as well. Fabian Delph also adding a goal in on this one, by the way.
I forgot he was still on the team.
You kind of even forgot that he existed. You kind of thought he'd retired along with everyone else. It was part of that Villa golden era that they kind of had there for a little bit.
The snake.
But yeah, he was back alive, adding that fifth goal in. City are now plus 19 in goal differential after six matches. That's
not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
Well, I mean, I feel like we say this every year about them. They always get this crazy goal differential that essentially gives them, essentially an extra point in the standings, right? Because they're going to win any tiebreaker as far as that goes.
But huge for them. Palace now six matches on the other side of things without a goal or a win for that matter.
Roy Hodgson era not starting great.
No. I don't know that anyone anticipated to go that different than that.
No.
If there was a little bit of a shining star in there, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, former Chelsea man, looked pretty sharp in the match for Palace, actually. Dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So, that said, Palace are negative 13 on the season after six matches in goal differential. Pretty poor for them. Real quickly, if I do have a favorite moment in this match, I don't know if you saw this at all, but Pep Guardiola pulling aside the ball boy right near the benches and having a chat like he was about to send him in as a sub. Literally pulled him in all clothes, had his arm around him, was whispering into his ear while covering his mouth like he was trying to hide all of his secret plans. Was hilarious to see actually happen in the match itself. Guardiola was asked about it after the match. He offered up an explanation that really doesn't clarify much of anything.
Oh, good.
He said, if there was a foul, no one went to take the ball and start to play. There was 5-10 seconds before someone goes to take the ball and start to play. When this happens, everything is slow. So the ball boys were slow. everybody was slow. So basically he was going over to tell the ball boy, hey, when there's a foul, get the ball out there immediately.
Let's make with the ball.
What's hilarious about this is how big the control freak Guardiola is, that he's literally lecturing the ball boys in the middle of the game. Like, absolutely hysterical. Makes it, the explanation, I think, makes it actually a little bit funnier. Because not only did it look like he was about to substitute the kid in, but he was actually giving him, like, a tactics talk on how to be a better ball boy, which is just as Guardiola as it gets.
Just underhanded.
Mm-hmm. Right technique. There's got to be a right way to do it. Let's move over to your boys from Chelsea, who came out in spitting fashion against Stoke City.
Yeah, so Stoke kind of has had a good start to the season as far as trying to hold top six sides at home. Held United.
Right.
Someone else got done by them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Arsenal lost to them.
Yeah, that's right.
Oops. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Chelsea, they were going into – and it's been a – you know, we always talk about the banana peel that this has been for Arsenal. But Stoke away has been it's a tough out for most clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a reason why people say, like, can teams do it on a cold, wet night in Stoke.
Right.
You know – it's a tough place to go and play. It's not quite the fortress of, like, pain that it was, you know, maybe at the height of the Tony Pulis era there.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not...
The dead ball era?
The dead ball era. The era where Ryan Shawcross raised all souls that happened across the Selhurst Park. Excuse me, not Selhurst Park.
Britannia.
Britannia skating pitch.
Bet365.
Whatever. But yeah, it's a tough place to go, and Chelsea marched in there this weekend and took care of business.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for them, it was not night.
Mm-hmm.
It was 3 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
and weather looked pretty decent.
Yeah.
So they had that going.
Not a lot of rain, at least.
Yeah. They scored like a minute or 2 minutes in, I think, of this one.
Yeah, it was real quick.
Yeah. Scored super fast. And that pretty much gave the tempo for most of the first half. Stoke played decently.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea was actually content for most of the first half to let Stoke just have the ball. Kind of going with a different approach. Generally, when you see Chelsea going against lesser sides, it's they're just the one applying all the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go up against tops, you know, bigger sides, top six sides, they like to hang back. This ended up kind of being the opposite. They let Stoke kind of do their thing and then just murdered them on the counter.
Right.
Morata had a hat trick.
Settling in nicely.
Literally could have had like five goals. I mean, I think there was like two that were cleared off the line.
Sure.
From him late on.
But looks like he's turning up the heat nicely, right as someone appears to finally be out the door at Chelsea. In the strike department?
Yeah, Costa. That was kind of the interesting timing of this. It was announced that Diego Costa has essentially all the principal arrangements have been made for him to move on to Madrid in January.
Atletico Madrid, of course.
Yeah.
Make sure you get that right.
The one that actually is interested in him.
Yeah. It looks like it's a deal. Chelsea have announced it as like the terms have been reached.
Mm-hmm.
£57 million. I think that's like a £22 million profit on what you guys bought them for.
Yeah, which a lot of people didn't think that was going to be even possible. They thought that, well, hey, I mean, yeah, the logic is everyone knows you have to get rid of this guy.
Right.
Obviously, you're going to sell him, and he only wants to come here.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, you're gonna have to give us a deal. We're not gonna pay over.
Well, if that deal was making a lot of money, then Chelsea definitely made a deal for themselves. Two questions on this, though. I thought this was really interesting. One, the transfer window is closed, right? Like, it's done.
That's what I was told.
So does that mean Kosa can play like right away, or does he have to wait until January?
I guess. Well, not only is it closed, but remember, Atletico is on a ban.
Okay, so that was my second
like,
my
they're
second
on a ban.
Question.
Like it is confusing. I'm not 100% sure. You know, the statements that Chelsea put out about it referred to everything as, you know, preliminary agreements or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, principal agreements have been reached.
Right.
So I think basically like just they've agreed to everything. that, but they know, like, hey, none of this can, like, be, like, signed and official till January 1.
Yeah. This isn't completely unusual to, like, teams signing players while they're on a ban. Essentially, it means you can sign a player. Like, right. There's no issue with signing a player. The issue is you can't register the player that you've signed. Right.
They have, like, the whole pre-contract thing. We hear about that all the time of guys, their contract's ending, mm-hmm. and they get these pre-contracts set up with wherever they're going next.
Sure. But I think that's even a step further. Barcelona, remember when they were on their ban, they signed a couple different players. Suarez being one of them. But mm-hmm. also Arda Turan, who came in, ironically, from Atletico Madrid. Mm-hmm. And those guys chose to sit out for 6 months because Barcelona literally couldn't register them as players until that point. So I'm curious. Like, I actually spent some time looking up to see when he was allowed to start playing for them.
And the answer?
I can't find the answer. I literally don't know. So I do think the transfer ends up in January.
I would hope that he's not going to be in the lineup on Wednesday when Chelsea hosts Atletico Madrid.
You'd have to imagine there was some sort of provision in that contract that would probably negate that.
Well, I think you've already had to submit your
Champions League roster. That's right? A valid point. Very valid point. So your boys' role, Chelsea.
Yeah, they do.
Doing well at the moment.
So this is interesting, though. So this sets up really interestingly for this Saturday. City go to the Bridge on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably one of our first big matchups of the season.
Sure.
In the Premier League. Two teams in the top three rolling. You know, Chelsea, the only big opponent they've played so far has been Arsenal. That was a 0-0 draw.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about, like, teams that are doing, like, really well.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like, top four, top five teams.
I don't think Arsenal are in the top four or five.
Oh, okay. Maybe they're not. Yeah, okay. So we did beat you guys. I was going to give you a break on that one.
Yeah, I appreciate I appreciate you not bringing up.
Let's do mention that.
And dragging it through the mud.
Chelsea won on the road.
Sure.
At Wembley 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Alonso had both goals, I believe.
Yeah.
Chelsea had all three goals, actually.
That's right.
But yes, you're right. So they had that, passed that test.
Sure.
Arsenal won. Meh. Chelsea and Arsenal have played to a lot of 0-0 draws in the
right,
past.
Right, exactly.
It was kind of hard to really draw anything out of what that meant for anybody.
Sure.
On the City side of things, you know, their big matchup that they've had so far was Liverpool. And, you know, obviously you can argue that that game didn't stay true to what it could have been because you had Mane kicking Ederson in the face and getting sent off, and then the floodgates open. But, yeah, obviously City still looked really good. Yeah, obviously I think advantage City, even though this is going to be at the Bridge, but we shall see.
As we shall.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move to three other top sides. Yes,
mm-hmm.
top sides.
Top-ish.
That barely scraped by getting those 3 points this week.
Yeah.
Liverpool hold on to beat Leicester. Your boys hold on. 10-man Spurs hold on to beat West Ham.
Yeah, fended off those hammers.
And then United hold on to get the 1-0 victory over Southampton.
Yeah, three really big matches as far as dynamics within the table itself. You're looking at, you know, United, who have more or less been keeping pace with City on the scoring front and the defensive stoutness front, really being frustrated by a Southampton side that have been wildly inconsistent this year, at times looking really sharp, other times looking completely, like, toothless at all. But United, I think there's one weird little plot line that happened in this, and Mourinho was sent to the stands in this match.
Yeah, it was like laid on, right?
Yeah, laid on, because he literally stepped out onto the pitch.
While play
was going on, and at a guy who was, the ball was legitimately being played to.
Right.
So,
this is like one during that charity match when he walked onto the pitch
and tripped
out Ollie Mers.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. But a really interesting incident in the, like, levels that Mourinho's willing to go to in order to really, like, affect the way the outcome of a match goes.
He's still got it.
Anyone that dislikes Mourinho, like, I just – I can understand you being like, oh man, he's taking advantage of something against my team.
If
like,
you can't get a chuckle and a laugh out of his antics,
if you don't think he's good for football, you are like sorely mistaken. Like, it is awesome.
Yeah.
The amount of drama that he brings to the game.
You're a total wet blanket.
Yeah.
If you don't see Mourinho is just a great character in the sport that just brings so much entertainment, hilarity, frustration.
If there's ever been an anti-hero in football, it is Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
So, but United get that 1-0 win over Southampton. I won't spend a ton of time talking about what happened with Spurs and West Ham. Early on, I will say this much. Early on, the Hammers actually had Tottenham on kind of a little bit on the defensive side of things. Coming out with a high press, it really troubled Spurs from being able to play the game they like to be able to do. But then Ener Valencia went down injured like 25 minutes or so in. They brought in Andy Carroll, who legitimately just isn't going to press to press, even if he could press in that manner.
Not his scene.
No. Great moment with Andy Carroll in this match, by the way, late on in the match when Spurs are clinging to a 3-2 lead, thanks to a Harry Kane double, by the way. Carroll, there's a really late corner, like 10 seconds left, Joe Hart comes up for it, everything's all crazy, and they show a shot of Andy Carroll just pointing up, like, to the person who's going to be taking the corner, insinuating, like, hey, play it in the air to me.
Right, I'm the tallest guy here.
Like there's literally any other way to play Andy Carroll in a corner late on in a match.
I hear he likes it as
Oh, I should put it up high. Got it. That said, Spurs having to deal with 10 men simply because Serge Aurier was sent off for a second yellow card.
Yeah.
Literally minutes after I had said something to the effect of, like, Kyle Walker who? Because Aurier
I did see that.
Like, so well, and then of course
I almost went ahead and trolled you and did like the old quote tweet of like, this did not age well.
Yeah, it did not age well at all, and you wouldn't have been the only person who did that to me. But they do hold on, big points for them, continuing to get them on the road, which is important because we apparently can't get them at home.
I think on it was Instagram. Roger Bennett referred to it as the match between two teams that hate their home stadium.
Yeah, I think that's a wildly accurate assessment.
Let's move to Liverpool. They hang on for the 2-3 victory on the road. These were all tight road wins that we're mentioning here. Over Leicester City at the King Power Stadium. Mohamed Salah gets on the board first, and then he's back. Philippe Coutinho scores a goal, actually had the assist on Salah's goal.
Mm-hmm.
So the long national nightmare is over for Liverpool fans in that regard, I guess. He's back, he's playing.
Until January.
Until January.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's playing so good.
Leicester, too, really exposing throughout the course of this match just how bad Liverpool's goalkeeping situation continues to be. Some really poor saves. That literally set up goals for Leicester's players to finish off. Vardy being one of the ones who capitalized on that. It's mind-boggling. You know, they keep bringing in offensive talents for this team, diversifying what Klopp has in attack.
Right.
But the glaring holes in the back of this Liverpool side, both in goalkeeper and center back, I can't believe they're not spending more on trying to fix that particular area of the field. And this match, as one, kind of illustrated that point.
Hey, he did save a penalty.
He did save a penalty. That is true. Could have been worse. Vardy literally pinging a penalty right down the middle.
Yeah, just shot it right out.
And Mignolet was able to handle it pretty well. So, yeah. Redemption given that Mignolet actually gave it away as well.
Yes, that's true. Liverpool... You know, it's funny. I feel like most talk about this match, like coming out of it, is like super negative about Liverpool. Yeah. Like, it's like, well, they did actually win this match, but you're right. Like, they definitely showed all of their weaknesses in this win.
Yeah.
Back line was suspect. Mm-hmm. Matip struggled.
Sure.
I think a lot during this match. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's still a lot of questions to be answered about this Liverpool side.
Absolutely. And I think further tinkering necessary to actually get things where they need to be.
Let's move to United. They get the 1-0 win over Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
The life without Pogba.
Yeah.
Going on for United. So lacking a bit of that creativity in the midfield.
Sure.
They still get the win. Southampton, was pressing well. They had to make a lot of midfield substitutions in this match. Ultimately, having to take off guys like like Juan Mata, Mkhitaryan had to be pulled for Smalling. Rashford, ultimately was taken out of this one just so they could bring on another defender. I think they showed that weakness.
Yeah.
And which is funny because that was one of the things that Mourinho didn't like about Mata, is he couldn't rely on him defensively.
Yeah.
And here he is having to take him off and bring in someone like Herrera who can kind of play both sides of the ball.
Yep, exactly.
But they do get the win, and oh yeah, it was Lukaku in the 20th minute. So he keeps rolling as far as goals go.
That he does.
And United keeps rolling. They're still right up there at the top with their city rivals.
Yeah, only behind them on goal differential at this point.
Yeah.
And not too far off at that either. Let's dip into the rest of the Premier League action.
Okay, where would you like to start? Would you like to start with Burnley 0, Huddersfield 0?
Yeah.
There's a lot to pull from
that. We can start there and then quickly move on.
Quickly, forget that we mentioned it. Everton won a match.
Yeah, how about that? Good for... The rumor going around, or not necessarily the rumor, but the like hot stat that everyone was throwing around prior to this match was the fact that Everton were in the relegation zone with a squad that cost more than Bayern Munich's.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's not good. Niasse?
Yeah, I think it's Niasse.
So he gets a brace. He scores two goals in the final 15 minutes of this match to get the win for the Toffees. It was Josh King getting on the goal sheet for Bournemouth. Bournemouth, though, continuing to have frustrating matches. The pieces are there for them to be a decent side, but they're in 19th right now.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say they are definitely in that relegation zone. One win from six matches. Leeching goals, but not tons of them. They've only given up 11 goals so far, so less than two a match, which is not great, but not
horrible. Problem is they're just not scoring.
Yeah, four goals in six matches so far. Just it's struggle for them to actually get over the hump. They grab one in this particular game, but it just wasn't quite enough to get them there.
And super important win for Everton. We talked about them kind of hitting an easy patch of matches here. And so far, so good. They get the 3 points. They're up into 14th. They're out of, they were in 18th. So I'm sure a lot of frustration going on. It's early, but still, just to be in that area.
Yeah.
For a club that definitely, here in the past couple of years has been in this upward trajectory of like, hey, we're really making something here.
Yeah. It wasn't all that long ago that Everton were kind of what Spurs are considered now, and actually Spurs have kind of moved beyond, was that team that was just knocking on the outside of the top four. But, we're pushing to try to get into that top four area. Spurs managed to crack that. Everton just haven't gotten over that hump and have kind of yo-yoed because of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, I can't remember who had said this online, but I'll steal it anyway.
Go for it.
The lazy Halloween costume this year for your average soccer fan is going to be Wayne Rooney with that bloody face.
Oh.
Just bleeding out of one eye. That's definitely going to be like... way too many people's Halloween costume this year.
Let's move over. Watford get a 2-1 victory over in Wales against Swansea City.
Mm-hmm.
This is a side that is... Oh, Tammy Abrams did score for the Swans. I do have to, of course, mention that. I'm obligated to. But this Watford side's continuing to still look good. They also, went in and got some nice little pieces that are working well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Andre Gray scores a goal in this one. Richarlison guy?
Richarlison.
Yeah.
Great name.
What a name.
Absolutely great name.
He is also proving to be a pretty good purchase that they pulled out of somewhat obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
So all things are well after not having to play Manchester City again.
Sure.
Today, we were treated to Brighton Hove Albion 1, Newcastle 0. Bit of controversy in this one.
Yeah.
As the American, I guess Brighton didn't hear that, don't tread on me.
No.
And they treaded all over him. Yeah. Literally, he got stamped.
Yeah, a little bit he did. Yedlin getting a Premier League start for Newcastle in the second straight match that he's gotten the start for them. But Brighton, this was a pretty, I don't want to say it an ugly match, because it wasn't ugly, but it was a lot of almost there, like 75% accuracy on most passes. Everything was a little off balance. I will say this is the second match I've watched at Brighton and Hove Albion's Falmer Stadium / American Express Community Stadium.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. Nothing else. It's just an absolutely fantastic atmosphere. It's one of those places that you can tell from TV that it just seems like a cool place to go and catch a match.
Wouldn't it be great if, almost everywhere, the stadium does not accept American Express?
Yeah, that would be great to have that name. Ironically, it's probably every, credit card terminal in the stadium only takes American Express. Yeah. But yeah, I can't really hype enough how cool the atmosphere seems there. And it's one of those places that I've already added on to my bucket list of stadiums to go watch a match.
Mm-hmm. Arsenal play, I think, West Brom Monday.
That's right.
It was, we record here on Sunday night. So, hey, that's Premier League.
3 p.m. kickoff. Feel the excitement on a weekday. There's also Champions League matches to look forward to this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, keep an eye on that. A couple big ones. That involve English sides. Spurs continue their impossible group action.
You have the weaker side of the bunch to go to.
Yep.
I don't even know what they're called.
Is it Applewell?
Applewell?
Yeah, I think it's Applewell.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know because it was all capitalized. If I was supposed to be going at APOEL?
Yeah. Everything that I've ever heard them discuss that is Applewell.
So. Yeah. And then Liverpool at Spartak Moscow on the same day. City hosting Shakhtar Donetsk. And on Wednesday, it's Chelsea. A bit of a big one as they go to Atletico Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And United heading to Moscow.
Yeah, that's right.
So have fun with that.
Yeah, Manchester City. Oh, you already mentioned that one. Never mind.
Yeah, Manchester City is, they're playing as well.
Yeah.
Let's go stateside.
Yeah, let's do a little bit of stateside talk. Can we start with what's happened here in Cincinnati? We talked a little bit about it on the last show that we said it was going to happen. It actually happened. The women's national team hosting the Ferns of New Zealand.
Yeah.
An international friendly at Nippert Stadium. Had a largest crowd for a women's national team match in Ohio history.
Okay. It's
pretty cool. Over 30,000 people turned up for it there at Nippert. Also, I believe the 7th standalone largest crowd in women's national team friendly history, including the competitive matches. But that said, really, really fun. U.S. women rolled to a 5-0 win. Wasn't necessarily the most competitive match, but if you were there for entertainment factor, you were definitely entertained.
Yeah, I would say if you were a paying spectator, you got everything you wanted. You got a local product, Rose Lavelle, returning from injury to make a 23-minute appearance at the beginning of the match.
Yeah, we were all happy to see her just make the squad, let alone
I mean, that was literally her first participation in anything since coming back from injury, I think.
Yeah, she's been battling some hamstring issues. It's been pretty tough for her. But she was back out. Looked a little rusty. She described her player herself in the same way. But that said, actually had a chance to sit in front of her parents and family. She had a huge group of people that were there for that. Really cool to see everyone all jazzed up about that. Every time she touched the ball, the stadium kind of moved to the edge of the seat, which was really, really fun seeing a hometown girl kind of get that type of attention. Two, there were loads of goals.
Yep.
There were five of them in this one.
Did you want to see Alex Morgan score a goal? You got to see her score two.
Yeah, you did. One of the things I will say about watching the women's national team up close in person a couple times this week, both in training, the game's definitely slower than it is in the men's game, even at the USL level that we're so used to seeing here in Cincinnati. But the level of technical ability within that team is astounding. And, you know, you always kind of like have that thought, and it's misogynistic, but it's kind of ingrained in the way that we all think about sports. It's like, oh, women's sports are kind of lesser than the men's ones. It was really, really fun watching how unbelievably good some of these players actually are up close in person, watching the things they're capable of. And you kind of have to remind yourself, like, oh, yeah, this is legitimately the best women's team on the planet.
My favorite part of the match, watching from home, was when they cut to some random player on New Zealand's team during the anthems singing the American national anthem.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I was like, hey, wait a minute.
what are you doing there? I'm sure
she's probably from like California. Yeah, her parents are. You know, Kiwis or whatever.
Hasn't moved over here a while ago. There are quite a few girls on that team that play here, both in the women's league in the NWSL as well as in college too. So, but yeah, they were great sports. You know, the game certainly, despite it being a bit of a whooping on the goal front, didn't really get out of hand at all, and it turned out to be a great affair. There's one thing that was really surprising about the match, something that I've never really noticed before, despite having gone to a handful of national women's national games.
You tell me yours, and then I'll tell you my most surprising thing of the match.
Given that you didn't go, I would imagine ours are very different.
Probably.
That said, the crowd, you know, we're used to big crowds here in Cincinnati for soccer now. You know, crowds of 30,000 aren't that unusual anymore for FC Cincinnati, but...
Right, you had two in the span of like 3 days or 4 days.
Yeah, that's right. But... it was a completely different crowd, much younger, nowhere near as much beer consumption, it seemed like. Normally, lines for the beer gardens and for the concession stands where beer is sold are really, really long at FC Cincinnati games.
You got to figure the amount of youth teams that thought this is the perfect time to go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just it was interesting to kind of see that, and maybe it's because I sit on the business side of things now when it comes to pro sports, that you notice those things, but it was something that I immediately picked up upon. Not that the American Outlaws and the supporters groups who are doing a great job, by the way, their TIFO was excellent.
Oh, that was my most surprising part of the match, is that Fox neglected to show the TIFO on the broadcast.
That's a bummer too.
Yeah, completely. I think they whiffed on the timing.
Mm-hmm.
I think something got screwed up in their pregame timing.
Sure.
Because they ended up doing, I forget who they interviewed like Jill Ellison or somebody during the time that it was being unveiled. So I think that was probably just a screw up as far as like, oops, we ended up doing this interview when we were supposed to do this. And
right.
So, because I know, I mean, and you can attest to this, like, the whole TIFO thing and stuff like that, that's planned out, that's orchestrated somewhat as far as, like, when that's going to be done, how it's going to be done, you know, here's how you want to unfurl it.
Yeah.
That stuff, you know, things get run through and things get timed out. So, I'm gonna give Fox the benefit of the doubt that there was just a slip up in the schedule during the pre-match to where when it got unveiled, they were accidentally doing something else.
Yeah, I'm not sure the answer to that, but...
we'll go with it.
Yeah, we'll say that's what went down on that particular front.
Yeah, so that was pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, again, it's like anything that you guys have been doing that make headlines. It's another feather in your MLS bid cap.
Yep.
So good things there. Let's talk about something not so good, and that's lawsuits.
Yeah.
And for the second time in about a month, the USSF is being sued by members or entire leagues. You know, we had the whole ProRel arbitration lawsuit thing that's going to be handled at some point by branch of government I didn't know existed.
I think it's the Court for Arbitration Sport, right. Which is actually
still didn't know that existed.
Independent of governments, by the way.
Well, good.
So that one, whether or not there's any sort of bearing that Cass can rule on in that particular front, we don't know at this time, and whether that will actually.
I would like to see what they've ever ruled on ever.
They rule on a lot of different things.
Really? Is it just like players union stuff?
Yeah, well, players, contract stuff, transfers. A lot of times these transfer bans, we were talking earlier about Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid also currently on a transfer ban, by the way. Barcelona, when they were on one a little while ago.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea might go on one here soon.
They all appeal those things once they get beyond like their own federation or UEFA, who's handing those out. The next place you go is to CAS, the Court for Arbitration Sport. And there are times where they reverse things and things actually have to be held to. So it'll be interesting to see if that it's not necessarily a lawsuit, but that challenge in the Court for Arbitration Sport is actually upheld on the pro-rel side. This new lawsuit is completely different. It's legitimately a lawsuit.
An actual lawsuit.
Mostly centered around antitrust.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be completely honest, as a employee of a club who plays in a league who's been named as a plaintiff in this suit, I actually have to kind of recluse myself from a lot of the conversation. That said, it is a very kind of seminal moment in what happens in American soccer, especially at the lower league level. Whatever conclusion they come to in all this is going to have ripple effects and ramifications that'll go on for quite a long time. The outcomes that we could potentially see range from, and literally, I don't know anything about this, but people are talking about things like a combining of the leagues, mm-hmm. a merger, if you will.
Of what leagues?
Of NASL and USL is something that's been mooted.
Force merger, always.
Yeah, force mergers.
Always gotta love that.
There's also been talk of potentially NISA and NASL combining into one particular setup.
Well, I could see that just happening out of necessity.
It might have to. There's been talk that NASL get their way and that it sort of adds another little feather into their cap of this CAS. Right. Pro-rel push that they've been looking for as well. We could see NASL go completely defunct again at this point. Like that's certainly on the table too.
Right.
So it's just there are so many different layers to this. Where teams are going to end up, who is going to come out, you know, looking all right out of this. It's a really, really complex situation that I can say this much will not be resolved anytime soon.
Yeah. And there's a lot of opinions being thrown out, and obviously you can't throw too much opinions out mm-hmm. being part of it. I will say this. As talking to some of the people that have dived into this lawsuit, have, our buddies like Napoon and the guys at Sock Takes that, you know, obviously they follow the NASL a little heavier than you or I would.
Right.
I think there's some interesting points to be made about this whole NASL, their whole conversation they're having with this lawsuit
mm-hmm.
is basically saying, in a nutshell, we aren't D2 and we aren't successful and we're not this. Because USSF has conspired to put roadblocks in front of us and to kind of hold us down.
Right.
Which is a fine and in some ways possibly you can make the argument it could be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But it also negates the overwhelming amount of business malfeasance that the NASL has been practicing for the past several years.
Sure.
It is not USSF's fault that you decided to allow Rayo Vallecano to just kind of go full-blown carpetbagger on a team in Oklahoma City. It's not USSF's fault that you did that.
No.
It's not USSF's fault that Fort Lauderdale is bouncing checks all throughout South Florida. It's not USSF's fault.
Right.
It's not USSF's fault that Cosmo ownership has had to change hands several times. It's not their fault that you have teams so effing far away from one another that the travel cost per team has got to be absurd and astronomical and larger probably than probably MLS teams as far as travel goes.
Yeah, I mean, think about the distance between Puerto Rico and Edmonton.
Edmonton, San Francisco.
I mean, those are just mind-boggling numbers. Real quickly, while we're talking about NASL, thoughts go out to those at Puerto Rico FC.
Yeah.
Lots of talk about whether the guys were even able to leave the island beforehand.
Yeah.
There's obviously immense devastation that's unfolded on that island.
We have friends that are down there that work for the women's national team.
Mm-hmm. The Puerto Rico women's national team, that is.
Yeah.
Corey Wisenhunt and
Joe Talley.
Saw today, luckily, that they both survived the storm. Yeah.
Well, their problem is like they want to update people, but at the same time, like they don't have consistent electricity to like charge their phones.
Yeah. Or, you know, have functioning cell towers.
And they've had to, like, you know, like, tell people, like, don't message me. You're just going to burn out my battery.
Yeah. Like, please don't.
Yeah. Please don't communicate with me. I'll communicate with you when I have a chance.
But, yeah, thoughts are definitely with those down there who are struggling with all
absolutely.
That. So, yeah, it is a really interesting situation that's unfolding in the American lower tiers. Needless to say, we're all going to be watching this with bated breath. Over what will likely be the next several months as we look to at least get a little bit more confirmation as to what's going to unfold with the teams and the leagues that we currently have.
To finalize my point, I'm just going to read a line from Sock Takes article that just kind of was a roundtable kind of opinion from all of their guys. And this is from Kevin Johnston. And he writes, the league had to seize control of Jacksonville Armada FC to keep it afloat, while the Fort Lauderdale Strikers and Rio OKC flamed out in a blaze of non-glory. Other clubs like Minnesota United FC, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and Ottawa Fury FC bolted for the greener pastures of MLS and the USL. All the while, the NASL pursued legal action against the USSF, claiming it was worthy of, wait for it, Division I status back in 2016, and thus comparable to or above MLS. If it seems crazy for a league to claim top flight status while unraveling at the seams, that's because it is.
Hmm.
We'll just end it on that.
Seems like a good spot. Thank you.
What do we got left? Let's hit the leagues, USL, mm-hmm. MLS seasons winding down. The domestic calendar here in the U.S. winding down.
That's right.
Four or five matches for most USL teams. Most MLS teams got about three or four matches left.
That's right.
You guys are in the playoff picture.
That's right, FC Cincinnati, currently sitting in sixth in the Eastern Conference. It's really, really tight between like fifth and like 11th place in the USL Eastern Conference right now. We're sitting a couple points ahead of those of us behind us, not exactly a ton of breathing room, but looking pretty likely that we'll get into the playoffs. The question becomes at what position and where we'll actually end up going for the first round match at this point. But lots of really interesting results that we've seen. Rochester Rhinos have dropped, I believe, four in a row and are really struggling when they had a pretty sizable gap ahead of us not all that long ago. So watch that race. It's going to be pretty interesting as the season winds to a close, at least in one of the second divisions.
Over in MLS, we'll start out west where I think we're getting close. We can almost officially say, I think probably after next week, that the Galaxy are not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think We can safely say it now.
That right. They'll they can mathematically eliminate themselves, like, I think, next week.
Yeah, that's right. But they are in a really bad spot out there, sitting one off the bottom of the Western table, 27 points from 30 matches, not exactly the type of things you would need to be creeping into the playoffs.
Vancouver is actually at the top out west. Mm-hmm. Portland, Kansas City. By the way, they won the U.S. Open Cup. That was also this week.
Yeah, that was actually a pretty fun game to watch.
It was pretty good.
Red Bulls going behind 2-0, pulling one back.
Right.
And literally, I'm thinking, well, this is deja vu from the final.
Right.
Or from the semifinal here in Cincinnati.
And they had their looks.
They absolutely did.
In the last few moments.
Looked like a raucous atmosphere at Sporting KC Stadium. Really disappointed that couldn't have been FC Cincinnati, although admittedly that was the day after the women's national team match, and I would have been pretty tired after that travel schedule that would have necessitated my participation here at Cincinnati and then flying out to Kansas City to make it work. But great final that was. I think it was the fourth Open Cup win for the Wizards / Sporting KC.
Yeah.
So Atlanta United getting another big match, another big win. Flying super high at the moment, 2-0 win over Montreal Impact. That gets them up to third in the East table, which is just mind-boggling for an expansion team, not to mention the crowds that they've had where they've seen like...
Yeah, Mercedes-Benz.
Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's like over 150,000 people in their last three matches, which is just insanity. Sorry.
They're
just
playing well there.
Mm-hmm.
They did have a bit of a problem this week, or tonight, or today, as Miguel Amarón came off hurt in the match. It was like probably a hamstring. He was like literally in tears because he knew like, oh crap. Toronto though, they have a 10-point lead at the top of the East. NYCFC is the team behind them. Chicago Fire is still in the playoff picture, so they've slowed down in the second half of the season. It hasn't completely cost them yet, so they're still there. Crew are still there, battling, playing well, beat the team right behind them, the Red Bulls, on the weekend. So Red Bulls rounded out.
Mm-hmm.
You got Montreal and New England, minus Jay Heap. Right behind them.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy the way that they dispatched them. You would have thought that they were completely out of the playoff picture, which they're not at this point. But we had all this talk about how domestically we were in this trend of former players, lots of young former players who are becoming coaches. Jay Heaps being one of them. You look at a guy like Jesse Marsh. Ben Olsen, Jason Kreiss, all these guys who are like MLS 1.0 managers who are kind of becoming the cream of the crop. And now we're actually starting to see, you know, I'm sorry, I left out Greg Berhalter. I almost feel embarrassed to have not brought him in. But not exactly after, you know, Kreiss has had his struggles. Heaps was out now in New England. I'm kind of curious to know if this is the end of that trend and if the success that Atlanta United have had, bringing in a big name coach, maybe that'll be a little bit more of the trend we're seeing moving forward.
Yeah, let's also mention at the bottom of the table, DC United.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because they've made a few moves here at the late on the season. They brought in Areola just a couple weeks ago. Steve Clark made his debut.
Yeah, I saw that. That was crazy.
Former Crew. Keeper who had a great run with the Crew, then went back out to Europe and has returned stateside and is hanging out in DC and made his debut in a 4-0 shutout this week.
Yeah, I do wonder too. Like, this is the last run for RFK Stadium. As far as DC United is concerned, they're hopefully going to have their ground up and running ahead of next season, or at least pretty soon into the beginning of it. I wonder if they're trying to build a squad that they will have the pieces for to be competitive next year in that new ground.
Trump's kid just got signed to the academy also.
So that made all the rage this week. That Baron Trump was playing at RFK.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone had their jokes about it.
If we knew the guy who ran the academy.
Yeah. I wonder if that's someone that we would have any ties to at all. Kind of crazy to think that they may know the Trumps. But even crazier, I saw someone make this joke, and it's worth repeating it again. I'm stealing it, but definitely not of my own creation. How hilarious would it be if Baron Trump turned out to be like a fantastic player, grew up, and chose to play for Slovenia?
How
incredible
would
that be?
If he was like a good but not great player, and like that would be the only national team he could get to.
And the Slovenia, you know, are fairly good. Like, they made it to a couple World Cups. They went to the World Cup. You know,
a couple World Cups. I've heard U.S., we got a bit of a streak going here.
Well, right. But you know what I'm saying?
That's like, what I'm saying. Like, if he was good enough to like make a national team, but like he thought, I don't know if I could, I don't know if I can break into the U.S. national team right now.
Oh, man.
But Slovenia's saying, come on out.
Why not? They have those cool mountain kits. Why not? I mean,
he's a big Arsenal guy.
I know. That's why I couldn't vote for him if he ever ran for office, you know?
Everyone's floating around with pictures of Baron Trump rocking the full Arsenal kit, like hanging out, like playing around in the.
He's 12. Yeah.
Well, you wonder though, like, is he an Arsenal fan or did like Stan Kroenke like send it over? Like, hey, bud, is your kid into soccer? I think I own a team.
Someone told me this is our jersey.
Someone told me I own a team. I can get a jersey out to you.
By the way, Stan, you have two. There's one in Colorado.
Yeah, there's one in Colorado. Oh. They're not doing too good. You might want to check in on them.
Yeah. No, but I thought that was pretty funny. Like the hilariousness that would ensue from that, from a mere political standpoint, would just be
couldn't handle
unbearable. It'd be unbearable.
Winners and wankers.
Winners and wankers this week. Why don't you start off with your winner?
This was actually brought to the attention, or my attention, from my brother Josh.
I saw this tweet.
Everton supporter. This week's winner is, I think his name is pronounced Ewan Jones?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I-W-A-N.
Yeah, Ewan maybe.
Yeah, Ewan Jones. He tweeted out to the Everton team account, if Niasse comes in and scores the winner, I will get an – I don't know why he picked this. I will get an Angry Birds tattoo. And so it happened, and Everton tweeted back at him.
Pay up.
Yeah. And in fact, they even tweeted out to the Angry Birds account going, hey, you know of any – you got any suggestions? And the Angry Birds account said, hey, we will pay for this and we will even send you some designs.
Yeah. Do keep in mind that Angry Birds is now the sleeve sponsor for Everton.
So there is a little bit
of a tie-in here. And it came to fruition, and Angry Birds appear to be picking it up. So
Angry Birds is going for it.
Best tattoo, probably.
I think even like Balassi or something also like retweeted like, "Hey, you better do it."
I mean, it's awesome. It's pretty awesome. My winner this week, I'm giving it to the consumer of Premier League football, who will likely be seeing better access to watching league matches if Amazon, or potentially another digital giant, actually ends up winning the upcoming EPL TV rights deal that starts in 2019-2020. I don't know about you. I'm not a Prime member yet. I've been like on the verge of joining Prime. Seems like it would be a silly decision not to.
It's a good deal on diapers.
Everyone keeps saying that about diapers.
They just show up. And you're like, you get to schedule it to just show up.
Show up whenever you want. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the savings that you get on them is apparently like it pays for Prime in its own right. So if that means diapers can help pay for my Premier League consumption, I'm all for that. I do think this is going to be a situation where we're going to see one of these digital giants actually get the distribution deal this time around. I would suspect that there will also be a TV one. Like, it's probably going to be split deals. But all that said, I think that, you know, if it's included on something like Prime, which you'd think it would be, or at least you get a discount if you're a Prime member.
Right. I mean, and Prime is already looking to, I believe they're going to get a few NFL games this year.
Yeah. I think you get one per week. Maybe one per month, I think.
But right now, that's just part of Prime. Mm-hmm. So basically, you buy Prime, and that's just
you get access to it. Prime, everyone's like, oh, you know, they'll bang out and make a killing on Prime. Prime actually runs at a loss for Amazon, but they know that.
Well, Amazon as a company runs at zero.
Yeah. Like, they're barely, like, scraping by in the big sense of things, but it's also because of the large amounts of capital investment they tend to throw at things as well. But all that said, I think it's going to make it for a more easily consumed Premier League experience, if I had to guess. And way cheaper than the $50
well, currently this,
forking out
for NBC Gold. And this comes on the heels of, you mentioned this on the weekend, that NBC Gold crapped the bed.
Oh, yeah, they had to send an email. Almost picked them as my wanker, by the way.
Well, they basically, once they got things like halfway through, in the second half, they got all the 10 a.m. matches working again.
Yeah.
So they just like sent out links like, hey, everyone can just hop on.
Go
it's
ahead.
It's free now.
Yeah.
We blew it.
I've had serious issues with the regular NBC Live app, because some of those matches are still on the regular NBC Live app.
Right. That's how I
access. And it craps out whenever I try to play them. Maybe it's just my phone, but...
Well, I had the problem where, for some reason, at halftime, the Chelsea match went to like the screen that says like coverage will resume shortly.
And you're like,
wait. And that lasted for 30 minutes.
Oh, cool! It's the best. That's the best. So, while we both probably should have picked them as our wanker, yeah. Who is your actual wanker this week?
My actual wanker would be Barcelona.
No.
Barcelona players for basically acting as if Dembele died. They walked onto their midweek match wearing shirts that said hashtag courage Dembele.
Oh my God.
He's not dead, guys. He has a leg injury.
He's just hurt.
He's going to be out for a few months. You know, of all the hashtags that were thrown out there, I mean, there's earthquakes going on.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple... few hurricanes, I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah.
That kind of blipped the news there.
Mm-hmm.
No. Screw all that.
Literally entire country in South America is starving at the moment. Yeah.
That 18-year-old we just signed hurt his leg.
Mm.
Hashtag courage Dembele.
Courage.
Courage.
Dembele.
Have courage.
Yeah.
Have courage to spend that 100 and whatever million.
Right. My winker this week, I'm giving it to a former Barcelona player and one who's been very much in the news lately, Neymar, for supposedly ending his friendship with teammate Edinson Cavani over who gets to take penalties for PSG this season.
Mm.
And even
that reportedly... played out really well this week.
And what's really gassing the flames here a bit is the idea that... this is confirmed because he has stopped following Cavani on Instagram, the ultimate millennial punishment. Cavani has been taking penalties for PSG since the Ibrahimovic era. Would Neymar made that same type of gesture, same type of fit, if he were still at Barcelona and Messi were taking the penalties? And I don't think he would.
No, he would not even dare to do any of that.
Yeah.
By the way, Neymar did not start.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend in their league match, and Cavani did, and oh, by the way, it was a 0-0 draw.
Huh. Interesting.
To, I believe it's pronounced Montpellier.
Yeah, Montpellier. If you're here from Ohio,
right?
That's exactly how it would go. Perhaps up in Vermont as well, or is it New Hampshire?
One of those. It's one of those places I've never been to.
They're pretty much the same state.
That's my wanker. What about you?
I just did mine.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I think
that's all we got.
I think it is this week. As always, if you want to be a participant on the show, we invite you to do so. Get a hold of us, contact@wrongsideofthepond.com via the emails. Jeremy's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond. That's all we got for you.
How about those Bengals?
They're great.
All right.
Let's end it on that one. I wish I lived in America. Wanna raise my kids in America. Heard everybody rich. All I gotta do is run, jump, kick. I'm a hit in your area. So please pick me, America. I know you probably never loved me. You never hear about me on the news, and you probably never been to my country. I hear you selling education, and got clothes that you throw away. Got plenty food in your nation, I can tell cause a lot of y'all are overweight. I already work for y'all, I'm in the sweatshops making these shirts for y'all. Now I ain't getting money, go to bed hungry, but I make some exports for y'all. Y'all don't know a thing about that.